I'm strapped up.
Tapping, what was that about?
Let's make the fight happen. We strapped the fuck up.
Boom. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 26 of the Strap Season Podcast. I'm your boy Cam.
I'm your boy Flows.
And yeah, we're back again. We're back again. Just before we kick off the episode, you know the usual, you know the drill now. We're on YouTube, we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Google Podcasts, we're on iHeartRadio. All the DSPs were there. Hit us up on Instagram and Twitter. There's a link in the bios. And you can find out, you know, just where we call home. So yeah, hit up that link, subscribe, leave us a comment. You know, I like conversation. So if you want to leave a little comment, we can have a little back and forth. You know, we like all of that. But yeah, let's get into the episode, bro. How are you?
I'm good, bro. I'm good. Yeah,
I'm looking forward to this weekend. One. Yeah, it's been a boy. I'm excited about this one. Yeah, let's get straight into it. It's been a great week of boxing, man. A great weekend of boxing, shall I say.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm just happy that everything is back now. The programming's been set pretty much every week. There's fights on. And so far, the fights have been good. And I'll say this week definitely was, for me, better than last week in terms of action, in terms of what we got. Let's start off. It's only right we start off at home.
Yeah.
Another week, another matchroom card. Yeah, we'll start with, obviously, this is the Josh Kelly card.
Yeah.
He was headlining, but I don't want to start with Josh Kelly just yet.
Okay, yeah, where do you want to start then?
Let's build it up a little bit. Let's quickly touch upon, you know, the co-main and the rest of the supporting cast. I tuned in from the Robbie Davies Jr. fight.
Okay.
I can't remember the guy he was facing. He was facing another Mexican.
Valenzuela.
Valenzuela, that's the one, yes. Yeah, obviously, I know you tuned in. I know you tuned into that fight as well. Here we have another week. Another week has gone by. And we have a British matchroom fighter that was favoured to win. And once again, we've seen another upset. The Mexicans keep upsetting the apple cart. What's going on, man?
They've been doing this.
Why do these Mexicans keep coming over here and they're billed as cannon fodder, they're billed as walkovers, they're billed as tests, but not stern tests, and they come out with the victory convincingly, Shayad. Would you say that's pretty much what happened with the RDJ fight?
I guess so. Yeah. I felt maybe a robbery was coming. I did feel that.
It's so funny. I think we both said straight away, judging and give it to RDJ.
But it was the right result in the end. It was close, to be honest. I'll be real. It was close. It was closer that I wouldn't say Valenzuela ran away with it, but it was still close because Robbie Davies Jr. put in a decent performance, especially after the knockdown that happened in.
That happened in round, is it round two? Or what might it be?
Yeah, it might be round two. I can't even remember.
Yeah.
He came back strong and he started to build up the tempo again.
Mm.
But then once again, these Mexicans aren't going anywhere in that ring. They don't fade.
They're just so tough, fold. Innit? They're so tough. Like, I mean, we know the reputation Mexican fighters have for just being tough as hell, but you really have to give credit to them because they don't come to play around. They really do come to fight. And the pressure from it's always constant. It's always on the front foot. I'm going to walk you down. I'm going to cut off the ring. I'm going to press you and press you and press you until you fold. I won't fold. You're the one that's going to fold.
Exactly.
And we've seen it time and time again. And in this fight, you're right. You know, it was a competitive fight. It was very competitive, I thought. I think both fighters had their moments. But I just feel like the cleaner work and the better work was coming from Valenzuela, as opposed to RDJ. Yeah, I preferred his work overall. And yeah, at the end of it, I'm there thinking, yeah, this should be a Venezuela W here. But I know how the thing, I know how the team goes, innit? We know how the team goes. It's going to be a robbery here. They're going to give it to, I had no confidence in them giving it to Venezuela. I thought they're going to give it to RDJ, especially if it's a close enough fight. They've got a fighting excuse to give it to him. And the excuse was, we saw, obviously, yeah, you mentioned RDJ got knocked down.
Yeah.
Which you think, okay, that's a nice little buffer for Venezuela. But we then see that, I think in a couple rounds later, Venezuela gets a point deducted by the ref for repeatedly hitting after the break, apparently, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you pointed out how it's just, there was no consistency with the referee in there because I think there were portions when the ref was warning RDJ about, was it hitting from the back of the head? I think it was hitting rabbit punches.
Punches to the back of the head.
Yeah, punches to the back of the head.
Yeah, gave five, six warnings.
Five, six warnings. And there was no point deduction, but Venezuela might have hit off the break two or three times and they were quick to deduct that point, you know, just to make it an even playing field again. So I guess we sort of saw what was happening. We're there thinking, I see what's going on. I see what's going to happen. But yeah, luckily that the judges saw that it was a clear victory for Venezuela. So congrats to him. These Mexicans, we now got to think to the point where anytime it's a UK fighter or held a fight against a Mexican fighter, just don't expect it to be a walkover, because it won't be.
What is, you need to stop trying to go toe-to-toe and trade with these guys, because these British boxers thinking, oh yeah, I'm the favourite.
Yeah.
I'm going to bang out with this dude. Better get on your bike and box.
Yeah.
Move, because that's how you beat these pressure fighters. You move and you beat them with speed. So,
And the jab, it's so funny, because you could hear throughout, Dominic Ingle is RDJ's trainer.
Yeah,
and he was saying each time they were going to the corner. In fact, not even in the corner, you could hear him shouting, "Don't stand there and trade with this guy. Stop trading with him. Move, jab, jab and move, jab and move. Don't trade with him. You don't want to trade with him." So the warnings were there. The warning signs were there. Unfortunately, RDJ wasn't able to heed those warnings. But I'm sure he'll be back again. This is his second loss now.
Yeah.
I think his other loss was Lewis Ritson that beat him before.
It was a weird dynamic with him and Ingle. It seemed weird because he kept telling him to stay in Southport. He couldn't.
Yeah.
Stay in Southport.
Mm-hmm.
And Robbie Davis Jr. didn't look comfortable.
Mm.
He looks like he wanted to change.
Yeah.
Dominic Ingle was insistent on him staying in Southport.
Yeah.
So it raises the question like, what should you do in that situation? He's the fighter. He's in there. He's only just started working with Ingle.
Yeah, good point.
And he lost the fight ultimately. So what does it come down to in the end? I wonder if we'll see them out together next time. But
yeah,
it just seemed a weird dynamic.
Mm. Yeah, that's a very good point. That's definitely something to look out for sure. But yeah, Venezuela marches on. I'll be interested to see him again if he does get brought over again. But it's definitely a name I remember and I'll look out for him. But first Lara last week and now Venezuela this week. Who's next, man?
If they run it back, I think Robbie Davis Jr. gets him though. I'll be real.
Do you think? Yeah.
Yeah, I think he gets him.
It wasn't his. I've seen him box better than that, RDJ.
Yeah.
I've seen him box a lot better than that.
Same. He was, when it came down to it, certain times he was winning the exchanges, but he was just staying there too long. He could have boxed the move.
It was similar to the Lara situation. What is like, RDJ was catching him.
Yeah.
It just seemed that it just seems like Venezuela's work was just more painful. And it looked like they just had more pop in his punches as opposed to RDJ. But yeah, that's just testament to how tough these guys are. They really don't fold, they don't break.
Yeah.
credit where credit's due for sure. Swiftly moving on. The co-main event, or the support, the chief supporting cast. Florian Marku versus Rylan Charlton.
Yeah, Rylan Charlton.
Yeah. So Florian Marku, Albanian welterweight, pretty heralded. I think he's pretty rated in the industry. He was, I guess, Rylan Charlton is a British welterweight who I guess isn't as heralded as Florian. And I guess the consensus going into this one was that Florian should have too much class for him. And Charlton shouldn't, you know, it's a bit too soon for Charlton to be fighting someone of Florian's caliber. And I think pre-fight, Florian was pretty bullish as to how, you know, he's going to outclass Charlton and make him look stupid in there and be talking to him in there and telling him, you know, you can't hit me. You know, all that kind of stuff, right? That kind of, you know, bravado. And yeah, I'll say for the most part, it went down like that, to be honest. Florian, who's definitely a character, for sure. You know, he's quite the character. He looked like he was sort of levels above Charlton in there in portions of that fight. I don't want to say, I've seen him look a bit more impressive. And obviously the main, I guess, black mark against him was that he did get caught. he got caught after doing a bit of showboating and whatnot.
Yeah.
But overall, I'd say it's a good performance from him. And yeah, Charlton, who's tough as old boots, was just a bit overmatched in there, to be honest. He didn't look like he belonged in there, in my eyes.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you've got to give Charlton credit because he's already upset the apricot once in his last fight. He's not anyone who's been tipped to shake the room, but he did in his last fight. He came in there and beat up, was it Joe Laws?
Yeah.
Made it look easy.
Battered him.
Made it look easy. So, and obviously, Marku, even though I felt he won his last fight quite comfortably, it was a draw.
Yeah.
And he weren't that impressive in that fight. He made it a bit difficult for himself, but I thought he won it convincingly. So
yeah,
I guess it seemed a good matchup. Someone who's overachieved and someone who underachieved. Let's see what happens here.
Yeah.
But like you say, Marku offensively and defensively was superior. His movement, the way he was able to stifle Charlton's offense, and he was just talking to him. But yeah, once again, you've got to give Charlton a lot of credit because he showed grit and heart. He didn't fold himself. He kept coming forward.
I think after four rounds, it was so clear that, okay, Marku is quite a bit ahead of this guy in terms of boxing ability and, yeah, skill, overall skill and punch selection and movement. I mean, there are times when he looked really nice in there, really fluid, lovely combos, was jabbing well, moving well.
Some of the angles on these
combinations. Yeah, it was. I mean, great angles. I like Marku. I think he's definitely got ability. But yeah, I think after four rounds, it was so clear. And the only thing that was keeping Charlton in the fight still was just heart. Was just grit, determination, and heart. Like that was because he was getting pieced up in there. Let's not cap. He was getting beaten up in there.
And patience as well. He wasn't getting frustrated, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he was
sticking to his game plan.
Yeah, he did look. I mean, Marku made him look very crude in portions, and I guess that's just testament to the skill gap between both of them. But this patience of Charlton and this determination, it almost paid off because he dropped Marku. He dropped him with a nice little, it was a flash knockdown, but it was still, I think Marku was sort of retreating, so it was a bit off balance. And Charlton's caught him with a nice left hook in the corner, and it's just dropped him real quick. Obviously, and then at that point, once Marku beat the count, obviously Charlton was on him like a rash. Yeah. And, you know, it looked like for a tiny little second, it looked like Marku was, you know, he was a bit overwhelmed by the pressure that was coming his way. But obviously he saw the end of it and then went into the corner and regrouped. But that was a nice little moment there for Charlton, even though he wasn't able to capitalize fully.
It was coming, to be honest. That knockdown for me was coming because my man was showboating. He kept talking to Charlton, saying nothing.
remember, I think I messaged you. I was saying, like, Marku's talking too much for my liking. Stop talking and just box.
Bro, he was showboating and he was dropping his hands and talking. I was like, look, if Charlton times you here, because you keep doing it, you're becoming predictable now. You keep talking. He's on a time with one of these moments.
A lot of these fighters need to realize, that this flashy, flamboyant, showboating thing, blah, blah, blah. As you move up the gears, it's not going to work. I'm sorry. You're fighting guys who are better and better and better. They're not going to fall for this. They're not going to stand for this. No. And it's fitting that actually we mentioned the flashy flamboyance and all that showboating stuff, because I think it leads us nicely onto the main event of the evening.
Hey, before we even get onto that.
Okay, go on. I'm going too quick, yeah?
because obviously Barkley was piecing him up. Great decision by the corner to throw in the towel.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Barkley grabbed the towel, put it on his head and started dancing.
That's like dancing. He's a character.
I just want to say that, yeah. He's a character.
He reminds me of Babbage. He reminds me of Babbage. Just like a Walter version of Babbage.
Both obviously foreign fighters, but both funny as hell, charismatic, both want all the smoke.
Yeah.
Obviously, Marky's been calling that Ben.
Yeah, oh yeah. You vigorously. Saw afterwards, he went to the, obviously, because Ben was working, Conor Ben was working ringside.
Yeah.
And obviously, he's gone, similar to, you know, obviously, he's gone to the court, to the ropes, obviously, and called out Conor Ben. Apparently, he's called him a coward and everything. Obviously, Conor Ben, you saw Conor Ben's reaction to it.
Yeah.
He was there, obviously, I've got bigger fish to fry and whatnot. You know, he tried to play it off as cool as like, yeah, whatever, man. But I'm over there and you're down there. But that's a I'm looking forward to seeing that. I want that.
Yeah, I don't mind seeing all these.
I'm happy seeing that.
Marco looks good though. I will say that he looks good. Just a few more learning fights and a few more, not even learning, more competitive fights for him.
Yeah,
he could be a problem. We'll see how far he can go.
Yeah, I like what I saw for sure, and he's definitely one to keep an eye on. But yeah, I'm sure we'll see Rylan Charlton again. That guy was tough, man. Real tough.
Stacked guy as well. Heads.
Wham. Wham for what a weight. Them short, compact, stacked guys. Stocky. But yeah, let's go into the main event, man.
Yep.
PBK. Pretty boy Kelly. Sporting a nice little beard. No, he's been in camp. This fight has been, 3 years in the making? With David Avanesian, remember? It was first talked about in 2018.
Is it 3 years now? Wait.
3 years now. They tried to get it on in 2018, apparently, and obviously loads of, like, postponements and whatnot. And obviously we were in the middle of a pandemic, so, yeah, all that kind of stuff. But finally, we've had it. Before I get into it, I mean, I think the question always was, right, is this too soon for Josh Kelly? Because quite clearly, if you compare his other opponents and then David Avanesian, the gap is huge in terms of skill set and level. David Avanesian is a guy that's an ex-world champion, for crying out loud. Fought at world level for a long time. Been fighting at world level for a long time. A lot of pedigree. And Kelly hasn't fought anyone of this level yet. So yeah, we said last week that this is such an important fight for Kelly because it's really going to, I would say, make or break him. But if he wants to be at the level which I guess the public hype him to be at and where he sees himself at, this is crucial for him. And unfortunately, Josh Kelly didn't pass the test. Flows. Hype train derailed.
Bro, I was saying he's a hype train from the jump. I'll be so real. Since 2017, I've never rated this guy. He's just not shown me anything that I want to give him credit for.
Mm.
Like, you're doing all this flash stuff, your hands down by your side, you're trying to do matrix, dodge punches, be slick and be cool in there, throw 10 left hooks. I swear this guy threw two hooks at the same time once in a fight.
Yeah.
Both hands went like this. It seems like he's always been more concerned with YouTube compilations than actually. And I've been watching it thinking, okay, this is your first fight. Cool. You're fighting a nobody. You're meant to win that. Second fight, you're still doing the same thing. Third fight, still doing the same thing. Mm. And these are meant to be your learning fights. Let's see the basics from you. Don't get me wrong. That's hella skill and hella talent, natural ability to have those reflexes and that speed. Mm. And his footwork is actually really good. He just doesn't use it properly.
Yeah.
His footwork's really good.
Yeah.
But, you're meant to be showing us what tools you have, the fundamentals, the basics. And that's what I've been crying out to see from him for time now. And until I see it, I'm not going to give you credit.
Yep.
So obviously going into this fight, I was like, it's all dependent on Josh Kelly. If he shows me something different and I'm willing to see something different, then he can win. If he doesn't, he has a tough night.
I think you famously said that you're just trying to see a jab, man. I think those are famous words from Flores, literally, listeners. Is there telling me, just please, you said I'm on the floor, a jab, please, just a jab,
just set something up with a jab. Don't, this guy will put his hands down by his side, dodge punches, and then start exchanging. Yep. He doesn't even dodge punches and get out of range. He'll try to dodge punches in range and then start thinking, okay, it's my turn. They're not going to wait for you. They're not going to let you get off. Yep. You're still in rage, bro.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so look at the fight. I think it's fair to say, yeah, that we saw some jabs from Josh Kelly. He was jabbing this fight.
Okay, yeah, he did.
He was
I jabbing. Asked for it immediately in the first round, and he did throw.
Yep, he was jabbing early jabbing. I think it's fair to say that straight away, this wasn't a... Because, you know, he tries to be on the flashy flamboyant thing from early.
Yeah.
He knows that Avanesian is a quality operator, a lot more quality than anything he's ever fought before. He can't do the flashy flamboyant thing throughout. Like, he has to come proper and come correct. So he came out conventional, was throwing jabs, had his hands up. And I will happily say that I first two rounds, I gave it to Josh Kelly. I think I gave him he looks very quick. First two rounds, he looked fluid, as he normally does. He's always been a very fluid guy. I noticed a size difference straight away. He's always been quite big, but I mean, he looks huge in there, to be honest, compared to Avanesian. He looks very, very big. But not just the size as well. He looked quick. And I would say that he definitely had the speed edge over Avanesian. And I think the first two rounds, his speed actually troubled Avanesian. I don't think Avanesian realized how fast he was. So that's why I had him getting the better of the exchanges. He was using the jab quite well, setting up his offense. It was still competitive. Avanesian is, we knew he'll be tough. We knew the game plan Avanesian was going to come with. But yeah, first two rounds, there was even a portion in the second round when he actually hurt Avanesian and had him rocked backwards. And obviously, Avanesian came firing back. But first two rounds, I'm thinking, yep, Kelly's banked that. The skill set is showing, the speed is showing.
And I'm not more credit than I am, but carry on. Give them a lot more credit than I was.
Oh, I know. And then I started to notice from round three, I think it was round three, maybe even from round two, I think, that Avanesian is starting to invest in the body here. And that was telling me one thing. And then the body attack was very brutal. And I'm there thinking, okay, Kelly is, he tries to rely a lot on this movement and the lateral movement and the reflexes and whatnot. But this body work is going to take its time. It takes its toll on him because he's on the back foot throughout, constantly having to retreat. And obviously, Avanesian was just pressing and pressing and pressing. And even though they were having close exchanges, Avanesian was starting to break him down. He was getting to him with the body work, with the constant pressure. And also, we were seeing that Josh Kelly's old habits were starting to rise up, as in his hands started going down a bit more. He started trying to do even more of the flamboyant stuff and whatnot. And he was getting caught every single time. He was getting caught so easily. And my issue with him has always been that you want to do this fast twitch fiber, you know, the reflex stuff. Only the real gifted athletes can do this stuff.
Against gifted opposition.
Against top opposition, only the real gifted of gifted guys can do this. And I'm sorry, Josh Kelly, you're not that gifted. You can do against the bums, and you look good against the bums. You look amazing against the bums because they're bums. These are guys with losing records, for crying out loud. So, of course, they'll look good. But against guys that are quality operator, guys who have fought at world level for a long time, it's just not going to work because you're not Roy Jones Jr. You're not Pernell Whitaker. You don't have those God-given reflexes. I'm sorry. And my issue with him is he does it, and he still gets hit. He gets hit. He will do the shoulder roll, but still get hit. Instead of you using your footwork, instead of you using your lateral body to maneuver and rock and roll, why don't you just use your footwork to get out of danger?
Exactly.
And put your hands up at the same time. Why? It's not hard.
Bro, that's what I'm saying about this guy. Like, what you're showing is brilliant, but you're meant to use it with different tools. You're not meant to just use it...
Exactly.
...individually, like, stand there and then have your arms down. In the you're not even up against the ropes. You're in the middle of the ring and you... Do you're moving your head and showing your reflexes, but you're getting tagged at the same time.
Yeah.
And before you start showing all that, break down your opponent first, show maturity, be patient.
Mm.
From round one, I was annoyed, bro. I know you were impressed. From round one, I was annoyed already.
All day prep, I was like, I can give you this round. Okay, cool. You're actually jabbing and whatnot.
I was giving him rounds, but I was still saying this is the same old Josh Kelly because he's more concerned with looking slick. He was feeding himself for round two. He was doing all this.
Yeah.
You know when you're posing in the ring.
Yeah.
I was like, not everyday reflexes. Use your feet. And he was rushing his work early. When he hurt someone, he feels like, let me unload.
He loved doing unload. That.
I was like, why are you unloading? Like, use the jab. Use your footwork. Get in and out of range. Control the distance. You're staying within range with a guy who's been at world level. And like you say, the body punches started to get to break him down slowly. So
I think you see from round three that obviously the game plan from Team Avenician was clear. They wanted to drag Josh Kelly into a scrap, right? Make it uncomfortable for him, apply hella pressure, and break down the body.
Is easy to do against Josh Kelly.
Josh Kelly, unfortunately, makes it easy for himself. So, for his opponent. By trying to be all flashy and flamboyant and not, I guess, using the correct fundamentals and basics. And, yeah, 3, 4, 5 especially, you know that the body work is telling. He's ripping the body. And he also, you notice, Avenician upped the pressure as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, Josh Kelly was on his bike for the bulk of the fight. But I guess there were times where, I guess the earlier rounds, he was happy to trade with Avenician. And you might say he was getting the better of exchanges because he had quicker hands. So, but he was in there in the pocket trading with him. But each passing round went, it's less trading, more flick out the jab and retreat a couple more steps and more steps. And Avenician was just literally looking like Triple G in his prime, right? With the educated cutting off the ring. Yeah. Stepping to him, cutting off that angle, stepping to that angle, whatever.
The experience.
And that's experience. And yeah, experience operating at a higher level. That's all that is.
Yeah.
And Josh Kelly had nowhere to go. And the bodywork was disgusting. And you saw in round five, he was starting to take deep gulps of air. And I think that's when I even tweeted.
Well.
Sorry?
He was bleeding heavily. Just
Yeah. So, he had a nasty cut in the back of his head. I don't know how that cut came.
I think it was an elbow or something.
Maybe. But he was losing a lot of blood from that. And obviously, there was an accidental clash of heads in like round 3 or 4, whatever. And that's got opened up a cut over his eye. But yeah, bleeding heavily on his bike. This guy is stepping to him. And once again, credit to Avenue, that guy is tough, man. That guy is strong. Because Kelly hit him with some good shots. But Avenue just kept walking him down. This is another example of a fight, obviously, a pressure fighter versus the slick mover kind of. And the pressure fighter broke him down, as we saw. And yeah, in round 5, he was breathing very heavily. And I'm there thinking, the later this goes on, it's Avenician's fight, quite clearly, because I don't think Kelly can't sustain this. He's really breathing, he's really blowing out of his ass. It's only a matter of time, I think. And then we saw it in round 6. The pressure was just too much for Kelly. He's broken down.
He dropped him in round six.
Wasn't a heavy knockdown. It was obviously lose your balance, gloves touch the canvas kind of thing. Obviously, he's taking the count now, the 8 count. Boom, boom, boom. As soon as the referee goes, all right, continue. Avenician's on his chest straight away. Avenician runs to him. He ran to him and then started unloading. And yeah, at that point, the tank is empty for Josh Kelly. It was gone. And yeah, then we've seen just before he's dropped again, Adam Booth is throwing him a towel. Fight done.
I think part of this is Josh Kelly didn't prepare for a 12-round fight. He thought he was going to go in there and blow Avenician away. And I don't know why he thought that.
That's silly. That is so silly.
I've been saying for time, this guy, you can't think you're going to use this style against everyone. You can't walk through all these guys.
Yeah.
Where you're just relying on your hip, your upper body movement and your head movement. And you're not using your feet to get in and out of range. You're just standing there thinking, oh yeah, I'm stronger, I'm faster. That's going to pay off for me. It showed there. And I guess I don't want to blame Adam Booth because a lot of these fighters have this style. When we look at someone like David Haye, who had his guard low and he had the reflexes and the athleticism to get in and out of range as well. But he done it better. He actually used his footwork. He actually threw the jab a lot more often. And he wasn't really trying to look slick in there. I didn't feel he was trying to look cool and stuff.
Yeah,
he was actually trying to evade punches and
hit
and not get hit. Yeah. Whereas Josh Kelly, I don't think he's trying not to get hit. Well, he's trying not to get hit, but he's still getting hit. He's getting pieced up as well. And he feels, let me look cool and look stylish in there. That's what I think it is. I think it's all this stylish stuff. He was trying to throw the Philly shell in there. And it was terrible. It was a terrible Philly shell. Because he was getting pieced up. And if you're going to use the Philly shell, at least you throw the jab hard and often.
Yeah.
And when you could look at Mayweather, Mayweather didn't just stand in a pocket and try and dodge these guys in the middle of the ring. He was using his footwork. moving side to side, getting them out of range, making them miss.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised by the result at all, because if Josh Kelly was going to be Josh Kelly in that fight, the Josh Kelly we've seen, he was going to lose. If he showed us something different in there, like actively from the early rounds, showed maturity and was just thinking, let me box and move. Let me not get hit. Let me not get caught in a firefight. If I need to use the head movement and the reflexes, I can use that because I've got that in my locker. Mm. I'm quick, I'm strong. But let me not mix it with this guy. Let me not take risks. But instead, he wanted to look cool. And I thought he'd learn after the last fight where he drew.
Ray Robinson fight, yeah?
Yeah. Ray Robinson. I thought he'd learn from that because it was the same thing. And I think I've mentioned before on the podcast, he's susceptible to getting outworked. He'll let people outwork him and let people hit him because or apply pressure on him because he doesn't avoid pressure almost. He tries to stay in there and like dodge punches like it's the Matrix. Or it's Goku or someone. I don't know who he thinks he is. But that's his style, and I don't think he's going to change. But that style will only get you so far.
I was going to literally ask you, do you think, obviously, he's taken this L now, and he has to, if he wants to be serious about his career, he's going to have to learn from it. Do you think that next outing or whatever, we see a change in Josh Kelly in terms of, because obviously, you learn from all the L's, right? You take it on board, you know where, and he would know exactly where he's gone wrong. Adam Booth, if he stays with him, would know exactly where he's gone wrong. Do you feel like we can now see a more fundamentalist approach with his boxing?
This was his chance to prove me wrong, bro. He should have learned from the last fight. He should have been learning that. I don't know. I can't say. I can't say if we'll see a change. Okay. I can't say because... If I'm saying this from... Bro, he's like, his fourth fight. Since 2017, I've been saying this. The guy needs to pattern up. This will work against these guys. It won't work against the top level guys.
Yeah, man, I've said it many times.
I've been saying that he may have no aspirations of going world level.
Yeah, he can't. Check the previous episodes. You said this many times that like, if he plans to go up, the more he goes up in level, the less he's got to stop doing this of this sort of like style. It's just not going to work because
this is European level. Like, well, obviously, Avenisa's operated at world level, but he's fallen short. Let's be real.
Yeah,
especially more recently. Anyway.
Yep.
This is European level now. And
you think though it was too soon for him though?
What do you mean? I don't think it was too soon.
I got asked the questions. I mean, 10 fights in his resume. Obviously, you're comparing the step up from Ray Robinson to Avenisian. Was he ready for something like this?
I think he has the talent to be ready. I think I think he's got the skill to do it. He just needs to be able to use the tools. Mm. It's more of a game plan thing and what you train or work on in the gym.
Yeah.
I think the loss is of his own making because the footwork's there. When you see his actual footwork, the way he creates angles for himself and some of the combinations he throws, offensively, his footwork's brilliant.
I see the talent. He's very talented. But yeah, I've always said this, the question marks over, how...
His mentality.
Just his mentality and how he approaches fights. The signs have always been there. Each fight, you're seeing it as he goes up in level. That style, he's getting touched more and more and more, as in getting touched up. Mm. he's very easy to be hit.
I'm sticking with that. Yeah.
And he shouldn't
with the same game plan.
He shouldn't be that easy to hit, especially with the footwork he does possess. So yeah, it's a damn shame. And obviously, the hype that he has around him probably hasn't helped because he has been hyped. he's been called Britain's most promising boxer. Him and Bawatsi, I think they said it was those two. Like,
they were the same GB squad, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those two were sort of earmarked as the ones that are going to be superstars and future world champions and whatnot. Don't get me wrong, he can come again. It's one loss. And it's happened early and he's young enough to learn from it. But yeah, I just hope he learns. Because I would like to see a finished Josh Kelly in terms of a finished article. Because I do think he can be something that's really good. But he has to learn fast now. He has to learn fast.
Defensively, there's a lot to work on.
Yeah.
His timing's off for me. Timing defensively, timing, where he picks his shots is off. You're dodging punches and you think, okay, now it's time for me to unload. And that person's still in front of you. You're still within range. They haven't even...
He's going to let you punch. Avenisa was getting a lot by doing that, yeah.
Yeah. You think they're just going to let you punch and you think it's your turn or my turn? What do you think this is?
What do you think? I'm just going to stand here and take the punches, yeah?
Like, you've got to transition properly between your defensive work and offensive work.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll see if he'll come again. If he steps in with Conor Benn, Conor Benn's still licking his lips, man.
Mm.
After seeing that before. After seeing it, to be fair, it's the same thing he's always seen, Conor Benn. He's not seen anything different.
Conor Benn's been real, from day one, he said he's not all that.
Yeah.
And obviously, a lot of people have said that Josh Kelly wipes the floor with Conor Benn and he's levels above him. He shouldn't even be in the ring with him. But boy, that's definitely not the case. Definitely not the case.
Man, anyone who throws punches and is licking their lips at the prospect of
and that pressure style is something he's always going to struggle with. I can just tell.
Unless he moves his feet.
That evolution is all wrong for him. All wrong for him. There's been question marks over his power as well. I mean, obviously, he caught Avenician with a good shot, but apart from that, he was laying into him with some good shots, and Avenician was taking it quite calmly. So, there's question marks. And the question marks are whether this is the right weight for him, because obviously, he is big at welterweight, and I was hearing comments about maybe he should move up to 154. I wouldn't recommend that one.
That's what the excuse is. Better stay where you are.
I think if you can make the weight, you're good. As if you make the weight fine, you're good. Working your craft down there and then consider moving up. But right now, stay where you are. We'll see how he is in the get back. The next fight anyways. But yeah, he's still below European level, which is quite damning, given all the hype that he's received.
Like you say, he's only 12 fights in, so he can still learn. Let me give him some credit in that sense.
I think this is the 11th fight. This is 11th fight. Huh?
Okay, yeah. Yeah, go back to the drawing board. If you want to use the Philly shell, do it properly. Use your feet properly.
Yeah.
We're criticizing people who are stepping in the ring, but yeah, you're stepping in the ring, so you're going to get criticized. Yeah. It's as simple as that. If you're stepping in the ring in front of people and you're doing all this flashy stuff, and I can see the errors in your game.
Yeah.
Then of course we're going to criticize you. And it's not just me. A lot of people are saying the same thing.
Yeah.
A lot of boxing people we've spoken to saying the exact same thing, seeing the exact same thing from him.
Mm.
And it's damning. But yeah, let's see if he comes back. I'm sure he will.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. He's young enough. It's tough, though. It's tough when you've been hyped to the gods. It's tough. But man, in fact, you need that reality check. You need that ego check, man. You really do sometimes. We'll keep an eye on it. But tough loss. Let's hop across the pond now. Some fights over there in America. Some good action over there in America.
Yeah.
I want to start with a fight that I tuned in for. I was really happy I tuned in for this fight. Really, really enjoyed this fight. We've got Oscar Valdez versus Miguel Bachelt.
Yeah.
I think Miguel Bachelt's super featherweight title, I think it was. His WBC title. A super featherweight. So Valdez is actually moving up from featherweight to challenge. Challenge Bachelt, who's been a champion for quite a long time now. Bachelt was heavy favorite. But, yeah, Valdez upset the apple cart, shall I say. This was an all-Mexican clash.
Big for the best fights.
Yeah, always... How many times have you seen classic matchups between two Mexican fighters, man? I love Mexican fighters, man, for real. But yeah, you catch that one?
Yeah, I caught it. I watched it back. Amazing fight, man.
Good fight, man. Good fight. And I like it when an underdog wins. It's funny because I would have picked. I think I picked before the fight. I picked Valdez to win anyways, because I've seen more of him and I just know what he can do, but. Yeah, I was quite surprised to see that Miguel was such a heavy favorite. Like, apparently, like, even like they were saying how, like, most of Mexico had picked Bachelt to win. Even Valdez's idol is, Bachelt's, I think, his eighth defense or ninth defense. If he won this, he would equal the great Hugo Cesar Chavez's record at that weight class.
Yeah,
he had nine title defenses. He was able to defend nine times. So I guess that's why they had him pinned as such a heavy favorite, because he was going for the record. He'd been champion for a long, long time. And obviously, Valdez was moving up. So he's naturally the bigger, stronger man. But Valdez showed, I think he showed the world, right, that how you as a smaller man navigate against a bigger guy and how to box against a bigger man. Use your superior speed, footwork, and yeah, that's some of the job done for you.
Mm.
And he was so much quicker than him. He was buzzing around him all fight, man.
It was super impressive performance, man.
Yeah,
and like you said, I think I had Valdez to win as well. So
yeah,
I was quite surprised by how much he was the underdog and how many people sided with Pichel. But that jab, I mean, I'm purely as well because Eddie Reynoso is training him. I mean,
yeah.
that was another big factor.
What a year he's having already.
Yeah.
Eddie Reynoso stable is looking nuts right now.
He's doing a massa. And I was thinking how he keeps getting these shorter fighters to perfect their jab against these bigger opponents. It's amazing. With speed, they're getting their jab off before the guys with
fam
who are longer and bigger than them.
It's nuts.
Getting their jab off first, getting their jab off quick. The footwork from Valdez was brilliant. Josh Kelly needs to watch that fight and take a few notes. The footwork, the jab, the switch hitting. This guy was home.
Yeah.
I love working. I mean, credit to Pichel as well because
he came back.
I don't know how he got back after the fourth and the fifth as well.
Yeah, there was so yeah. I mean, I think from the outset, obviously, the story of the fight was that Valdez's speed was just peppering Pichel. Pichel looked sluggish compared to him.
Yes.
And obviously, it's almost like Valdez just danced around him with the footwork and the jab and final combinations and getting out of there before Pichel could even throw his stuff back.
Obviously, using the upper body movement, his head movement as well.
Yep.
In the right times and when he needed to.
Another shot of Josh Kelly, yeah?
I'm just giving my body flowers. Kelly and Valdez, that's all.
Yeah. So, obviously, Pichel was the main, you could say he was the one stalking Valdez, but Valdez was using superior movement and whatnot. And yeah, he's dropped him. Is it in the fourth or the fifth?
Yeah, the fourth round.
Fourth. Dropped him. Badly.
Like, actually, was that the round where the ropes kept him up?
Yeah.
But he was all over the place. That's what I remember. He was all over the place.
But Pichel's legs were so gone, as in like this guy was stanky legging all over the shop. It was bad. Like DD popping everywhere. I don't know how he survived. It was a left hook. Valdez couldn't miss with that left hook all night. That left hook was money all night. Like dangerous. He could not miss. Pichel was having serious issues with Valdez's left hook. He just couldn't see it coming. He was hitting him, tagging him all night, having him wobbled all the time. So after that fourth/fifth, I think, I'm there thinking, yeah, it's a formality. Valdez isn't going to win this. But we've then seen in the following rounds, right? That Pichel sort of had a little second wind and started coming back. Crazy. And he was dragging Valdez into a little scrap.
It's crazy. From like the sixth or seventh round, this guy was walking, applying pressure, coming forwards.
No pressure.
And Valdez must have been like, what the hell is going on here? Whoa. I think he was just rattled. What the hell is going on here?
I'm there thinking, wait, he's banking rounds again. What's going on here? He looks strong.
Like the ref, like let's be real, the ref could have stopped it in the fourth.
Yeah.
The ref could have stopped it because he was all over the place.
Yeah.
When it was like, wait, bring your hands up. This guy was still wobbling.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But yeah, I mean he was onto like a little miraculous comeback, right?
Mm.
And then I guess Valdez found his second wind and he was able to catch him again. Started switching. And he was able
back and
to,
forth as well. It wasn't like he was settling. The one he was switching back and forth.
It's something I think we're seeing this a lot. You know, fighters these days they tend to switch more. I feel like we're just seeing like it's becoming more and more commonplace. But don't forget, being able to switch hit is just meant to be seen like a super like rare skill.
Yeah.
Right. A highlight of you just being truly ambidextrous, right? But we're seeing it more and more now that fighters just tend to be switchers. And I'm pretty sure they're not even ambidextrous. They just train both stances. Mm. I guess, or if you're confident in, you know, both your hands having power, there's no reason to stick to one stance. If you're confident in both your hands, you can switch easily, right? It's no issue. Mm. But yeah, I feel like we're seeing that a lot more with fighters these days, that they tend to be switchers.
It's part of the chess game as well. It gives your opponent something to think about. And if you could do it and pull it off, because it's not easy. That's why I always gave credit to Fury, even back when I didn't rate him, because he's always been he always switched his stances. But yeah,
yeah,
it's a good tool to have if you know how to use it right.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, he's able to get the switching going, and yeah, he was able to once again tag him with a couple more left hooks, and I mean, he closed the show in devastating fashion, didn't he? I mean, that knockout was dirty. Bachop face planted the floor.
Oh yeah, Bachop swung. What's it called? He's left hook, right with it, and he does both of them. Landed his left hook.
The setup was beautiful, bro. I kept rewinding it. The setup was nice. He's dodged both of them, and it's the most perfect counter left hook, short counter left hook. Boom.
Folding him while he's standing.
Beautiful. He, like, he saw his legs were like.
Like a futon, my man.
Like, you know, like the window shut, like, shut down. Like just completely shut down. System shut down. It was nasty.
Face early mark, contender for KO of the year.
100%. Right, nice KO. Time to perfection. Credit to Valdez. Like I said, being an underdog couldn't have been easy. Apparently, obviously, his idol is Chavez. Chavez is his idol, right?
Yeah.
And apparently, Chavez openly came out and said that he thinks Pacquiao's going to win. So that definitely fueled him. So yeah, fair play to him. That was a wonderful, wonderful knockout. What performance. And he looked great in there, man. He really looked great in there. Mm. I'm gonna move to someone more heavier now. Quickly. Did you see the your boy Brazil's back in action, wasn't he?
My boy, I've never rated Brazil. What performance I look like, I thought this guy's good.
Yeah, it was against Otto Wallin. He's the guy who gave Fury hell. Mm. Quite comfortable victory for Wallin. It was quite easy for him in there.
Yeah.
Brazil was Brazil. He doesn't really offer much. He's just big, plus forward, slow. And Wallin was pretty easy nights work for him. I think it was a UD, right?
Yeah, I think all the judges gave it to him.
Yeah. Do you think Wallin is someone to look out for?
I mean, his amateur background's pretty impressive, very impressive. He's mixed it with all the guys who are at the top level, really, in the amateurs. Mm. So, and his performance against Fury was impressive. Yeah. I thought he'd win this fight because, once again, I don't rate Brazil. And Wallin actually shows he's got a bit about him. He's not just a punching bag. So, I think he is one to look out for. If he keeps shaking the room and keeps stepping up, he's a good fight for people. But he's still a bit of an unknown quantity because no one really saw him fight until the Fury fight. But he's beaten. His resume is looking better than Ortiz's already.
Yeah, I have to agree.
His resume is looking pretty good. So let's see. I'm sure he'll keep taking tough fights. And I think he can take on a lot of these guys. Only maybe the top guys could beat him.
Mm. Yeah. No, I've been impressed with what I see from him. And I'm going to definitely keep an eye on him. He's got good fundamentals. You can tell that he's had an extensive amateur background, just the way he boxes. He's good. He's pretty decent, to be fair. Brazil's a routine win. It's expected for him to win that. So we'll see, I guess, where he goes next. But yeah, he's definitely one to look out for, I reckon. That was the undercard of the main event, which was the return of the problem. After two long years, Mr. Adrian Broner is back.
Who
was he against again?
Santiago, was that his name?
Yeah, Santiago something. Santiago. So, yeah.
Something Santiago, I think it
yeah,
was.
I yeah, think, yeah, you're right.
I forgot his name.
I said last week I wasn't going to watch this fight. And true to my word, I did not.
Oh, you didn't? Oh,
I did not watch this fight, no. Did you watch this fight?
I did watch it.
Perfect. Cool. I just want to ask some questions, right, about the fight.
Okay.
I didn't watch it, but I feel I can predict what sort of went down, right? So the first question I'm going to ask you, right, is... Where do I start? Okay.
I feel like Adrian Broner's lawyer. When the case has been fighting, I'm stepping into...
Did Adrian Broner allow himself to get outworked in this fight, in any portion of the fight?
I believe he did, yes.
Okay. Did Adrian Broner... refused to throw punches for the most part in this fight?
Yes, I guess, yes. He was typical Adrian Broner in that sense, yes.
And on the odd occasion where he did throw punches and land, did he sort of like stopping and Murray's his own work and be all happy and smiley when he landed, like a nice little, you know, like nice little combination.
I'll highlight one bit which sums it up, him up perfectly.
Yeah, go on.
He landed now and then he clinched. He was like, sharp, I'm too sharp. You can hear him.
Oh my gosh.
And guess what the ref said?
You're lying.
The ref said, yeah, you're sharp. Stop talking. This is boxing. Box. The ref stopped him and told him that.
You're lying. Yep. He actually went and said, I'm sharp.
I'm too sharp. Yep. And the ref said, yeah, you're sharp or something, but this is boxing. Box.
Did at any point in the fight, did Adrian Broner get tagged and did he start shaking his head? Did he, at any point when he got tagged, did Adrian Broner start shaking his head and acting like the punch didn't hurt him or the punch didn't affect him?
Yes, I have to say so. he was acting... Well, to be fair, in his defense, he never actually did look hurt, to be honest.
Mm. But I'm saying, did he get caught cleanly? Like, he was shipping clean shots, and did he, you know, yeah, start shaking his head, like, or nope?
I can't really recall him doing all that stuff. Right?
Okay, he's learned a bit then.
He didn't actually get hurt or badly. Yeah. He's actually quite strong. I'll give him credit.
He's very strong.
He took punches. And there was a lot of body working, but he was taking them. He weren't doing all that dope stuff, which is good. Okay. I didn't clock it, but
at any point during the fight,
he was discrediting his work in a sense.
Yeah. At any point in the fight, did Adrian Broner attempt the Philly shell, but got tagged whilst in the Philly shell?
I'm probably defending him because he actually didn't use the Philly shell that much.
Oh,
he had a high guard up.
Okay, because if he's not in the Philly shell, he's got the high guard going. Okay,
yeah, he didn't really use the Philly shell, which was good to see. So I can't even be way too critical. He weren't keeping the low guard doing all this stuff. He did have a high guard up.
As the fight
grew on, he kept his guard quite high. So.
Very interesting.
I didn't say that he was trying to Philly shell throughout the fight. He did use it in portions, but he weren't getting pieced up in there. I'll be real. He weren't getting pieced up. He was getting at works, but he weren't getting. Oh man, I won't get old. Damn, AB. But he was letting Santiago. A lot of body shots were raining in, but because he had the higher guard in and he is strong in terms of his punch resistance is quite good.
Mm.
It looked like he was hurt or anything, and he was getting off some of his punches.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, that's how I answered that.
All right, that's all the questions I had. But it sounds like it was a typical AB fight to me.
Yeah.
maybe some small improvements made, but I mean, I've seen the reaction obviously online and whatnot from the post fight and whatnot, and during the fight I was seeing tweets and whatnot, right? And it sounded like it was a typical AB performance, a performance that we're used to seeing. And yes, he got the UD, right?
Yep.
Seeing a lot of people say it was a robbery. And Santiago deserved to win. So you, having given that you've watched the fight, be honest as you can here, bro.
Okay.
Who won that fight? Did AB win or lose?
It's a weird one. When you look at the punch stats,
I'm gonna get onto that. Don't worry.
When you look at the punch stats, it's hard to argue for AB. Very hard. But watching the fight, I never felt AB was in any trouble. I never felt he was badly hurt. It depends on how you want to score it. Yeah. If you want to give credit to Santiago for his pressure, and it wasn't overwhelming pressure.
Okay.
It wasn't overwhelming. It was a boring fight, I'll be real. It wasn't overwhelming pressure, but he was doing a lot of body work and he was throwing more than AB. But AB was throwing as well. Not throwing, he weren't throwing much, but when he did throw, it wasn't much either, kind of thing. It wasn't much. But when he did throw combinations, it was like, okay, here we go. That's a good little combo there. But his jab weren't stinging. His jab weren't great.
Mm.
Obviously, we know AB is a counter puncher, but I felt like Santiago was trying to counter punch as well.
In
portions. So it wasn't a high out punch out fight.
So, my guy, what was your verdict?
Oh man, I can't say AB won, but then at the same time he won. It's just like that. I can see how he won because he looked comfortable in there. I'll be real. He looked comfortable and okay. He was landing. So
yeah,
it depends on how you score it.
Mm.
Like I wouldn't say it was a robbery. No.
No. Because, okay.
But the guy landed.
Okay. If for example, the judges gave it to Santiago, would you be like, yeah, that's fair?
Yeah.
Okay.
I couldn't argue with that.
Okay, so Adrian Broner didn't do anything to separate himself really from this Santiago fella, who no one's heard of and he's come from nowhere.
He probably landed the
He didn't look the class operator in there.
He probably landed the cleaner shots. Okay. The cleaner shots and the more eye-catching shots in there.
Oh, yeah, we know he's got that down. We know he's Mr. Accurate, yeah. Right?
Yeah, the combinations when he did throw it, you know he fights in small pots.
Yep.
The combinations when he did throw were clean, they were crisp. And he didn't look it looked like the Maidana fight where Maidana had him running back and out,
yep.
Stumbling and fumbling. He looked strong in there. Mm. He just didn't let his hands go.
I mean, I'm looking at the punch stats here now. Punches landed and Adrian Broner landed 98 punches for the entire fight.
Yeah.
And Santiago landed 207.
How many of those were body shots, can I ask? Do you have that there?
Yeah, I got it. Wait, okay, so body shots, right? So Santiago landed 91 body shots.
Okay, yeah.
AB landed 11.
Yeah, he didn't go to the body.
Power shots. It's... Santiago landed 124 out of 333, right? Adrian Broner landed 49 of 161.
Damn.
Jabs. Santiago landed 83 jabs out of 384. Sorry, 364. Broner landed 49 jabs out of 177. So he's getting outlanded in every category.
He doesn't let his hands go.
I'm so, off just listening to what I've seen. Okay, from what I've seen in the timeline, I listened to your semi-breakdown of the fight.
And I'm giving Adrian Broner a lot of credit.
You into this fight. And yeah, you're even copping pleas from a little bit, low key. That's cool. You're not against him. You know, he says everyone's against me. You're with him, cool. Adrian Broner has not changed. Nothing's changed.
You don't want to give him credit? I mean,
I'm giving this guy no credit. Adrian Broner stinks. That's it. I'm done with him.
Damn.
He's an oxymoron. You know, he is. He's an oxymoron. How could you, as a boxer, your professional boxer, not like throwing punches? Is that not insane? I don't get it. He doesn't throw punches.
He wants to, he admires his work too much. He's another one. He likes to think he's cool and stick in there. And he's a counter puncher as well, kind of thing.
He's not naturally a counter puncher.
He's not.
He's made himself one because of his association with Floyd. Let's break down Adrian Broner's career. Yeah.
At 135, this guy was a demon.
Yes, I'm going to answer. There's a reason why as well.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm going to say, Adrian Broner. The worst thing that's happened to Adrian Broner was meeting Floyd Mayweather Jr. Simple. That is the worst thing that's happened to him in his career, because before his association with Floyd and that, Adrian Broner was known for being a super offensive fighter, exciting to watch, lets his hands go, fast, athletic, powerful, right? That's what he was known for.
Yep.
And, okay, I think he was using the Philly show a little bit before Floyd. But he was using it differently to Floyd. Obviously, no one can use it as well, Floyd. And, obviously, I think he's always idolized Floyd, so he will naturally try to employ some of Floyd's stuff. But overall, he was a guy that looked to get his opponents out of there, throw combos, throw them often, and do his bit. And that's what, obviously, he had a meteoric rise. And obviously, Adrian Broner, this is when he was fighting at 135. So I think he won the belt in 130, then went up to 135, and then so on and so on, right? And obviously, we're seeing this guy cocky, confident, arrogant, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, he was a guy that was out there. He would trash talk his opponents, take the Floyd blueprint in that sense, but perform, right? And I'm seeing the guy and I'm buying into him more and more. I'm thinking, yeah, I think we both bought into him. Let's be honest. We both came onto Adrian Broughton at the same time. And I think we were both saying, yeah, like this guy, man. He's funny, man. Like, obviously, he'll wreck his opponent, but he'll do his thing. Then we will call the antics. And yeah, he's ruined it by going to meet Floyd and changing everything up. At 135, you're right. He was a demon.
And he was... And the long weight classes.
From 130 to 135, Adrian, he was really a problem.
Yeah.
And especially at 135, right? Part of the reason why I feel like personally, if I'm doing a deep dive and sort of looking at retrospect, first of all, I'll mention the quality of opposition wasn't great. I don't think the quality of opposition was the best. I think his best, the best name on his resume, I think two guys at the lower divisions. Daniel Ponce de Leon.
Yeah.
And then the fight that sort of made him, the fight with, you know, DeMarco.
Yeah.
That's his best, that's his best performance ever.
Yeah.
That performance there is peak AB, as in wonderful. Do you remember the inside work in that fight?
He was brilliant.
Oh my God. That inside, yeah. If I want to take a blueprint of a Showtime fighter, how to work on the inside, I'll say, watch Broner's fight with DeMarco.
That's what convinced me this guy was meant to be the real deal.
Bro, that fight there is what sold me. I said, yes, he's the one. I see the hype now. I like him. Mm. He was sitting in the pocket with him, riding shots. This is pure inside work. All fight, riding shots, and then uppercutting on the inside, all that kind of stuff on the inside, right? Amazing one. And DeMarco was, I think at the time, considered a step too far for him. Yeah. But he outclassed him, battered him. And that's why I'm there thinking, yeah, he's the guy. He's got a few more wins under his belt after that. But just in regards to 135, I noticed one thing. Adrian Broner was a lot bigger with the guys he was fighting. Even that 135.
Yeah, he was.
He was a weight bully. There's no two ways about it. I think that's what gave him a lot of, especially with the knockouts as well. Because don't forget, he was knocking everyone out. I don't think he hasn't knocked any other person out for a long, long time, AB.
He hasn't won in a long time.
But in terms of, you know, when you move up to water weight, when you move up to 147, the power, like, I think the only time we saw him drop someone was when he dropped Sean Porter, but that was a flash knockdown.
Yeah.
He stopped knocking guys out. And I think him being at 130, 135, the fact that he was a lot bigger than everyone, I think the fight made me realize that, like, this guy's actually a weight bully. You remember his fight with that English guy, Gavin Reese?
Yeah, he was huge compared
to the matchroom fighter, right?
He beat him up.
Check the weight, check the size difference. It was crazy. Huge. He looked massive in there. I'm going back to his other fights. I'm thinking, this guy is a weight bully. Like, he's a lot bigger than these guys, which I think that added to his success when he was fighting at the lower weight classes. And obviously, these guys weren't that good either. Well, apart from DeMarco and Ponce de Leon, the quality wasn't great. Boom, he's met Floyd Mayweather now, and obviously, naturally, Floyd's your idol, so you want to emulate Floyd, you want to be like Floyd and whatnot. But with Broner, it was a bit. It's a bit too much. He tried to take the whole blueprint. It's like he inherited all the negative aspects of Floyd. Like, he'll be out in the clubs, right? But Floyd will be out in the clubs. But the difference between him and Floyd is, Floyd wouldn't drink.
Yeah.
We know Floyd does not drink. Doesn't drink, doesn't do anything. He'll be in the clubs, but he's not drinking.
Adrian Broner's getting burst.
Burst. Finished. Paralytic. As in gone. And then thing is with Floyd, you'll see Floyd, he'll go to the club, but then Floyd will then literally straight from the club, go back and train. Like, Floyd was so disciplined with his thing, right?
Mm.
Broner was going on rap tours.
Yeah, this guy started rapping, going on tours.
Going on tours with other rappers, doing lifestyle. And I'm there thinking, bruh, I really hope that this guy is focused, you know, because obviously I know how the media can portray you. They did it to Floyd for years, right? They tried to portray Floyd as someone that isn't focused and whatnot. And then Floyd will show that, nah, I really I live this lifestyle. I'm training all the time. I'm eating clean and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm seeing Broner between fights. He's got a pot belly.
Yeah. Before his fight, his man said he weighed 108. He had to come down from 180 pounds.
What?
That's insane.
But that's in between fights, yeah. Broner's conditioning was shocking. Shocking. He didn't live. You can see Floyd lives the life. Inside and outside the ring. Training, living, eating clean, being healthy. Yes, you might see the cars and the jets and the flashiness, but when it comes down to it, he's really working hard. Broner has none of that. Huh?
I will say, when Bron is in camp, he does look like he's focused. He does look like he's focused. He does look like he trains hard, but he's just the in and out.
No, but the thing is, for me, I don't even think, obviously he's focused, but I literally think that Bron has spent the majority of his camp time cutting weight.
Yeah.
I'm not even joking. I don't think he actually spends that much time on actually boxing skills and whatnot, because remember, we were saying that, yes, Bron went back when he was a prospect. Obviously, yeah, we bought into him now. We're saying he's super promising, but obviously, as boxing aficionados as we are, we can see we can see chinks in armors and whatnot. And the first things we used to say was, oh, he doesn't really use his feet much, though. He needs to work on his footwork. His footwork is kind of non-existent. That was one thing. And other little weaknesses are he needs to stop doing the shoulder roll because he gets caught too much. He's better up when he does the high guard, right? Mm. We've said this before, and he has not changed from day one. The same weaknesses
Footwork was lacking last night, I'll say. Footwork was lacking again.
He's always had poor footwork. Always had poor footwork. And he will then go and say that, I didn't need to use my footwork. He couldn't hit me, man. But bro, you need, as you go up in competition, you will need the footwork.
I think his problem is he doesn't feel that he's getting hurt. So he feels they're not scoring.
Yeah. That's there. Just because you're not rocked doesn't mean that the judges aren't taking this off as a point for this guy or whatever. Like, they're still scoring shots. So it's like he hasn't realized, you know, that, yeah, he's getting hit, he's getting tagged, and it's making him look bad. But obviously, he's then started associating with Floyd, and we've even started to see a change in the way he boxes. Floyd, as we know, is a supreme counterpuncher. Arguably one of the best ever counter punches, right? Floyd is someone that doesn't overwhelm his opponents with pressure. He hangs his hat on the fact that, one, you can't hit me, and two, I'm mega accurate. My timing is so elite that when I throw, I will catch you. And that's why they say Floyd is the most accurate in compu box history. Floyd is the most accurate fighter of all time in terms of accuracy, because he isn't, which is crazy, right? But it's fair. And Bron is trying to fight like Floyd. So those good attacking aspects that he had to his game, he's now dulled them to try and be this mega defensive. I'm going to use the shoulder roll too. I'm not going to throw much. I'm just going to time you every time and counter punch you and look cool, being slick and slick and flashy, right? And it just does not suit his game. I think we said from day one, he's a much more offensive-minded. When they kept saying he's a new Floyd, and we were saying, I used to say, no, he's not the new Floyd because he fights nothing like Floyd.
Yeah, exactly.
He's actually got a lot more attacking instincts than Floyd. Money Mayweather, that is, anyways.
Yeah.
Like, Bron's got really good hand speed. He's actually got, a bit of pop to his punches, and he's really strong, and he's quick and athletic. So he's actually offensive-minded. He tried to be defensive-minded. And the issue with that is the shoulder roll isn't that good. The reflexes aren't that good. You're getting hit, bro. You're getting hit. That's the downfall.
The same thing where back when he was purely just a problem, he was a demon. Then he became about billions. CEO of the Bandcamp.
CEO of the Bandcamp. The can man.
When he became about billions and started changing his whole persona in terms of all. Well, he's always been flashy and flamboyant, but when he was bare concerned about money and whatnot and trying to be like Floyd's.
Yeah.
And moving up to welterweight really was where he started.
He jumped two weight classes. So he skipped 140 and gone straight to water, and he went and challenged Paulie Malignaggi, which is fair enough. I think that's the right person to challenge. Paulie is a powder puncher, as they say, right? Yeah. Paulie can't punch. Obviously, we don't have to go. We know how the build up with that one went.
Yeah, crazy.
Legendary build up, crazy build up. He was always going to cause a scene. So he's jumped up two weight classes. And I actually think that I actually liked his performance against Paulie. I like that. Even though the first half of the fight, he was losing.
Yeah.
He wasn't throwing much. He was getting overwhelmed. He's getting outworked. Once again, very fortunate the fact that Paulie Malignaggi can't punch in terms of power wise. He's got no power. Yeah. Paulie doesn't knock people out. You don't feel his punches.
Yeah.
And then I think that half of the fight, AB started doing the good stuff that I like. He started walking Paulie down. Because the first time of fight, he was getting touched and doing his shake of the head thingy, like, nah. And I'm thinking, bro, you're losing rounds. Stop saying nah. Start throwing punches. And he started throwing punches. I was happy. I like him when he's offensive. When AB's offensive, he's really nice to watch.
He takes a while to get going. That's part of the issue as well.
He takes forever to get going.
Yeah, he's a slow starter.
Real slow starter. But when he gets going, he's nice. The combinations are fluid. He's
blocking. Just needs to start fast.
He's catching punches on his gloves. Yeah, but he would never start fast. I've seen the stats yesterday. He didn't throw a punch in the first round.
So the judges gave him that round as well.
Disgusting. He didn't land a single punch in the first round. And the judge, that's why I know. If I watch this, I'm sure I'm going to say Santiago won this fight, but it's cool. I'm not going to watch it because I don't want him put to sleep. He's boring. He beat Paulie. Big win for him, obviously. But I think that's when we started to see the direction he was going in, I think. Because like I said, half of that Paulie fight, he was awful. Second half, he was good. But the first half, he was nasty. And he wasn't throwing. He was getting outworked. And then came the Maidana humbling.
And many more humblings ever since.
I think with Maidana, obviously, he went in with the same game plan. Adrian Broner's worst nightmare is a pressure fighter who throws a lot of punches. That's his worst nightmare. Because of the fact that he's a non... Because of the fact that he doesn't throw punches, he's so easy to outwork. So easy. And as you mentioned, yes, he might not be getting rocked, but these are scoring blows. But boy, Maidana rocked him. Maidana rocked him for sure. I just feel like if he hadn't met Floyd, we might have seen a different AB. His career might have gone slightly differently. I think that the antics and stuff, that is him. He's just apparently, when he fought Porter. Obviously, yeah. The Porters have known him because obviously they're both from the same state. They're all from Ohio, right?
Yeah.
So Kenny Porter has known Broner for a long time. And he said that he was a bastard as a kid as well.
Yeah, so he's just done a lot of sparring.
Yeah. Obviously, Broner's really from the hood. So obviously, he's grown up rough and he beat murder charge. He beat a murder charge or something, didn't he? He beat some crazy charges and stuff. So obviously, he's a real hood baby. And he's never changed that mentality and mindset. So apparently, he's always been a problem child. Hence why it's called
fighting court cases all the time.
Yeah. we said that it's quite clear that outside his life outside boxing has infiltrated and affected his life in boxing. Different court cases every day, charges, all sorts, jail time. It's the rap sheet is crazy. He's a mess. He really is a mess. And then the antics. At first, I found them funny. Now I find them distasteful. Do you remember his interview when he lost to Pacquiao?
Yeah. Oh, after after the ring.
Yeah, after with Jim Gray.
What did he use against me? So you're gonna give me a fair shake? I beat that boy.
I beat that man. He said, Jim Gray, bring your ass over here. And Jim Gray was like, look, you better you dress me properly, or we're not gonna have an interview at all. I remember at the end when he said, Jim Gray said, oh, yeah, you've lost your last three fights. And then he said, I've won my last seven fights against you. And Jim Gray said, okay, that's nice. I don't find it, before I used to find him funny, right? I don't find him funny no more. It's cringy.
Right,
that's
funny.
I saw the interview afterwards. You know, when he said that obviously he had $13 going into the fight.
Yeah.
And they slipped it to 30 mil and he was just talking rubbish again. I'm thinking, he's not funny, man. This guy's I'm about to use a real bad word there, but let me relax.
But nah, he's the one who coined the whole the care, man. Anybody can get it. That's legendary stuff, man. Legendary trajectory.
He's had funny moments in that, but now I tell you what, I find the antics really forced now. I think he proper forces it now. It comes across as mad force now. Like the cameraman stuff was post fight, it was quite funny, cool. But now I find it hella force, man. I don't know, man.
How can the ref tell him to stop talking in books? Why was it up too sharp? All right, if you don't watch the fight, just find that. I'll find the clip for you.
Send me that clip because I can't believe he's there saying I'm too sharp, and the referee's telling
him he didn't
even
do anything at that point. I don't know what he was praising himself for, but I was like, I'm too sharp.
Yeah, man. AB is definitely the boy who cried wolf. I think he should retire. I mean, it sounds like he still doesn't want to throw a punch. I mean, I'm trying to think the last fight I took him seriously in, because I'm thinking, after he took those L's against Maidana, I'm there thinking, you know, similar to every fighter, cool, it's a loss, a setback, cool. You can come back, you learn from your mistakes, you'll be back. He's got enough ability to. He's got a lot of talent. He's so gifted. But the same
mistakes... It's going to be too much money for me to back him.
Facts.
I've backed him too many times. And he's disappointed.
The same mistakes kept happening and kept happening and kept happening. The same issues never changed. I said, okay, I washed my hands with this guy, man. I'm done with him. And it got to the point where I was tuning in to his fights to see him lose. Like, I'm there thinking, yeah, he's going to lose, blah, blah. Obviously, when he fought Pacquiao, I said, yeah, finally, cool. He's lost this. There's no way he's beating Pacquiao. Not over the amount of punches Pacquiao throws. And that fight made me angry, right? Because it was so dead because he refused to throw punches. Mm. I'm there thinking, yeah, I can't tune into this guy's fights again because I don't even put to sleep. This is the guy who doesn't like to throw punches. What business do I have watching that, man? Proper
oxymoron. He'll still get big fights, though. He's a name. He'll get big fights. We just
He will keep talking himself into fights because he's got a mouth and he's got a big profile and people like to tune into it. So,
still a big name, a very big name.
Yeah.
And an easy name to get a win against.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to remember, this guy's a four-weight division champion.
And you know the ability is there, because not only you've seen it, but also we can't forget his amateur record is also nuts, you know?
Yeah.
Like apparently, most of these welterweight champions or ex-champions, he beat in the amateurs.
Yeah, like, that's why he's always confident.
He gave him hell in the amateurs. Like, he was a real issue in the amateurs. So the guy can fight his ass off if he wants to. But half the time, he's winning for a bunch. So, what's the point? I just don't see the point in it, man.
It's a shame.
And a big shame, because I'm now looking at all the other top contenders, for example. He gets bashed by them all. Even up-and-comers, killing him. Like, if we're talking welterweights, right? Like, any up-and-comer welterweight, like Virgil Ortiz and Jerron Ennis, they're murdering him.
Yeah, he's not going to go to welterweight.
And now he's got guys that Tank's weight class calling him out. Like, you know, or even 140, guys like Programming calling him out, saying, yeah, they'll... And I'll back them. They'll destroy him.
Programming is killing him.
Destroying him. Josh Taylor, killing him. Yeah, man, he's cooked, man. He's cooked.
Boy, anyway, I know there's more boxing to come.
Yeah.
We'll see if he still mixes in with people. He says he wants to fight more. He needs the money. He needs to stay focused.
That's nice. I'm sure we see the same old story. I don't think he can change. It's too late for him to change now. So it'll be the same old story.
He's just collecting paychecks now. So
yeah, he's just definitely paycheck. Obviously, he's got his four-weight world champion thing. So that's nice for the history books. He's got that. That's nice. But he's not a serious guy. I can't consider him a serious threat, a serious contender. It's cool. He's cooked, and that's fine. He's a gatekeeper now. Gatekeeper AB. But yeah, I'm gonna leave that AB right there. That's it. That's enough. I've spoke about him enough.
Good enough for your chest.
Yeah, man. He just jars me, man.
Okay, let's leave that one there. Anyway,
and so maybe because he made me look silly because I backed him. I backed him hard, and yeah, man. Let me down, AB. Let me down, man.
Oh,
well. Yeah, let's leave it there. This has been a great episode. I think we both got things off our chest.
Yeah, we've roasted a few people today.
Yeah, man. Let's leave it there.
Actually, we got Canelo next weekend.
Yeah, so, you know, yeah. Actually, yeah. Quick touch up on Canelo. We know what's from. We haven't got a canvas that one. That's the formality.
Yeah, we know. We'll give you the rundown after that one happens.
Yeah, that's a calm Canelo W. There's no upset there. Trust me. Yeah,
easy boy. Man. Stoppage at some point.
Yeah, he should be. I mean, if Eubank Jr. stopped this your dream guy, I promise you the Canelo can. So, yeah, man, it should be simple.
The most exciting thing from that is if they announce the Billy Joe Saunders fight, which we hope they will. So, next episode, tune in. We'll give you the breakdown
for real,
of all that.
For real. As ever, check us out on all the platforms. Leave us a nice little review. Follow us. Leave a comment. All of that. But yeah, I've been your boy Cam.
I'm your boy Flows.
And thank you for keeping it locked. Peace.